Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Heroes come and go, but legends are forever. Kobe Bryant.
Now, legend, did I hear you correctly? You said that prior to this 255-mile race, your longest prior race was a 50K.
Yeah, I think this online media person did a race preview. Chase Parnell. He does Treeline Journal. And he tweeted and was like, showed a picture of my, it's called Ultra Sign Up, where it shows your race history. And it showed 150K for me. And he just tweeted, wow, bold move, because it showed that Cocodona was the next one. And it was like, yeah, just jumping up from 30 miles to 250. And it's like, yeah, it's a natural progression, I guess. But
natural progression. Another reason your name is legend. That is legendary right there.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest who appeared last season. And I am very excited to welcome back to the podcast, Jeff Legend Garmeyer.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me back. Got a lot to catch up on after we left everyone wondering what happened to me.
Yeah, and you know what? I had a bit of an anxiety attack after I aired the last episode, thinking maybe I had pronounced your last name wrong, but I think I heard you pronounce it Garmeyer as well. Am I getting that okay?
Absolutely, yeah. You're actually one of the few that has it right, so you're way ahead of the curve here.
Okay, and I am really enjoying the fact that we're having some of our most popular guests come back on and do a second round of interviews here on the podcast. Legend, you had your episode just went right through the roof. People are engaged with you and want to hear about you. So it's nice to see your friendly face and the new hairdo come back on the pod.
Yeah, this is the run all day, take a shower, and then jump in front of the computer instead of the mirror and figure out what you look like. So this is what I do for you here.
It's perfect. Thank you. We really appreciate that. And, you know, I was taking notes and kind of brainstorming about how to introduce you. What would be the proper introduction for Legend? And I went through some various options here. I went with the, you know, amazing ambulator. I went wow. with the hiking hero, Barkley badass, or just the man, the myth, the legend. So, I mean, do you have a preference on any of those?
I mean, the last one's good. I think you could describe me pretty well just by describing the shirt I'm wearing on your show. So that might give everyone some insight into my style here. So, you know.
Nice. And that's a plug right there for you to not only listen to the podcast on the radio, wherever you get your podcast, but also to tune into the YouTube feed for the John Freakin' Muir Pod and see what Jeff Garmeyer, AKA Legend, looks like right now.
It could be nothing. I could be wearing nothing at all, or I could be wearing something just striking. I'm sure my check is in the mail for plugging YouTube.
Wow. What a big tease right there. Yeah. You have to pause the podcast right now and tune in on YouTube. Very good. All right. And you know what? I was intrigued when you agreed to do the interview today, because you said that you were exhausted and vulnerable. And so we might get a lot of information out of you tonight. What's going on?
Yeah. Every full moon, the last few months, me and my friend have, run through the night on some epic adventure. So we did a 20-mile ridge run in Bozeman one time, then some mountains. And then this time we did the Timberline Trail. We started at 8 p.m. last night and finished about 10 a.m. this morning. So we went straight through the night, did 40 miles in 13, 14 hours, and just had some good fun under the clear skies and the epic moon out there, just staring up at Mount Hood.
Okay. Well, save those thoughts, because I want to check back in on that and hear about some of the other night runs that you've done and what kinds of hallucinations you've had out there with sleep deprivation. We'll get back to that. But just to remind our listeners out there who maybe for whatever reason weren't able to tune in to the last episode that you were on, give us a quick thumbnail sketch of who Legend is. What are you known for? What have you done? What's your resume look like?
I'm 30 years old, very good looking. If you're not watching on YouTube, if you're on YouTube, just keep that to yourself. And I've backpacked about 30,000 miles in the last 10 years, including things like being a triple crowner, but doing that in 1 year. Well, actually in 9 months, I did all three trails. And then a thing called the Great Western Loop, which is a 7,000 mile loop around the Western United States. And I think about 16 trail speed records, including Colorado Trail, the Long Trail, Pinhoti Trail, number of other ones out there with that. Just really into finding ways to push the limit, whether it's distance or speed or sleep deprivation. I've gotten into a little bit more running and racing like that. So I've really begun to, I think as soon as I feel like I've gotten a hold of something, I like to jump into something equally uncomfortable and start from zero again and build up. And once I feel like I understand what's going on, it's like time to find something else new, because it's no fun when you know what to expect out there.
Wow. So you're admitting that you actually figure out what's going on, because the more I delve into stuff, the more I realize that I don't know hardly anything. And so I'm not sure I'll ever know anything or everything. So yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I think I figure it all out eventually, right? Don't we all? Or we convince ourselves maybe.
That's probably the case. That's probably the case. One of my favorite stories from your escapades on the trail is the time where you went to go reach for the moose antlers to take to the next town and ship those home, and found out that they were still attached to a live moose. I mean, that's quite a story.
Yeah, the moose charged me. I dove into the bushes, had to run back through the brambles, hide behind a tree, and then backtrack a half mile and go around the moose. But yeah, it was an epic story. And if you want the full fleshed out version, that it is in my book, so you're gonna have to buy that. But you can get it on Audible if you're not a reader, because I'll read it to you.
That's right, because Legend is an accomplished author. He has a book out there, The Free Outside, that details his calendar triple crown. It is an outstanding read. I highly recommend it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's something unique to be able to look back from above and kind of judge yourself on what you did in the moment. So that's kind of the unique way of writing about something that happened in the past.
All right. And one of the other things I like about you is that you are involved in a number of activities. It's not just hiking. I mean, you've also done some trail running and entered some of the, you know, longest, toughest trail races out there. And so I think there's a lot to be said about cross training and how one activity really improves and helps the other activity. I know just from this past summer, you know, it's not the Great Western Loop, it's not 7,000 miles, but I did 125 miles out on the trail for 8.5 days and came back 9 pounds lighter and in great shape. And it happened right in the middle of my marathon training, and I am just killing my training runs right now. So I I did a 9 miler yesterday, and the fastest mile was my last mile, which, you know, I'm really enjoying my current level of fitness right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think the changing things up and avoiding the complacency and being inspired is kind of the cool thing. So you've been running and you go out backpacking, you come back to running, and it's fun to be going fast again. So you you get a whole new appreciation when you get to change up the activity. So I've always been a big fan of that.
That's right. And to help set the mood today in the John Freaking Muir studio, I've got a gift from my daughter, my youngest one. It is a Muir Woods scented candle. She saw that, she had to pick it up. Now, what makes it scented like Muir Woods? I'm not sure. It's got bergamot, mandarin, oak moss, and patchouli in it. And it's got a couple of wooden wicks, which I hope don't set off the smoke detector in the room. So we'll see how that goes.
So you're not actually out in that backdrop that you're recording in? I was going to say fires are probably not allowed back there.
I am not at Evolution Lake right now. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Spoiler alert.
It's a little deceptive. I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's fair. Okay. I'll have to chew on that for a couple minutes, but I'm good.
Okay. And since the last time I talked to you, I understand that you went on Jeremiah Stringer's podcast.
Yeah. I think I've done theirs a couple times. They're fun. We just goof around. Yeah. It's good stuff.
We had him on an episode, and it was great talking to him. I really enjoyed him as a guest. And we compared some of our common guests that we had interviewed. So you were one of them, and you were the topic for a good 15, 20 minutes. He talked about some of the things you guys were going on about.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, I mean, it's all types of stuff. You never know what you're going to get when you start talking to me, especially I've slept an hour and 48 hours. So put your hard hitting interview hat on, and you could get some good content.
All right. That's what I plan to do. And for those of our listeners out there who may not be familiar with your trail name, Legend, it is not because of the 30,000 miles you have under your boots. It's not the 7,000 mile Great Western Loop or taking on a bull moose trying to pull the antlers off its head. Legend actually has to do with a story about pizza.
Yeah, I started backpacking through hiking in general when I was 20 years old on the Pacific Crest Trail with the big old external frame pack. And we, as a group, left Wrightwood and ended up making the big mistake if we didn't pack out some epic trail food or some epic town food to eat on the trail the first night. And we were camped there, and the ramen and instant mashed potatoes was uninspiring. So I told everyone that I would hitchhike back into Wrightwood and come back with some pizzas and steak for the group. And they thought it was pretty impossible at that hour. But, you know, hour and a half later, I showed up with pizza and steak for the entire group. And it was really driven by being the youngest one there and wanting to impress them. But they decided that it was legendary. And then my friend Buddha pulled me aside a little bit later and said, you know, with a trail name like that, this can't be your only through hike. So I guess maybe I took that to heart a little bit too much, but here I am.
Yes. And I understand you did not do that hitch with a pack on. Is that correct?
Yeah, I had Crocs and just a jacket. I looked much more homeless than through hiker, which is always a tough way to get a ride, but somehow it worked. My ride back to the trail was with a 16-year-old who had his license for 3 days, and his friend was in the car, and I didn't think we'd make it, but lo and behold, he didn't take any corner too fast, and we stayed on the road, but it was touch and go there for a minute.
Well, the fact that you got a hitch there and back without a pack, dressed like a thru-hiker, that right there is legendary.
You know, I probably would agree with you. I was wondering for a while trying to get out of town if I was just going to be stuck with all this pizza and steak and never be able to fulfill my promise without a pack. Even I would have been vulnerable down there. So I guess if anyone wants to take one piece of advice, is don't ever leave your pack where you don't know how you're going to get back to it. That's a big lesson.
That almost sounds like a pro tip, which, you know, comes at the end of the episode. I'll turn to you and ask you for your pro tip. What bit of insight can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better?
It could be that one, or it could be a different one. So stay tuned.
Yeah. No one knows what they're going to get with 1 hour of sleep in the last 48 hours from Legend. So we'll see.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, let's take a second. Let's talk gear. because we have a gear segment that is sponsored by the Ultralight Backpacking Gear Company, Outdoor Vitals. And usually how it works is I ask you, what piece of gear must you pack for like a multi-day hike? But what I would like to twist this to is for the Barkley Marathons, because we're going to talk about the Barkley. You participated in the Barkley Marathons. What is your must bring piece of gear for the Barkley Marathons, Legend?
A quality headlamp. And it's the biggest difference between through hiking and trail running is when you're moving a little bit faster, that better headlamp, like 400, 500 plus lumens with some of the new technology that lights up things a little bit better. And there's even some stuff that you can wear on your waist and hits things from different angles. But when you go from just backpacking or hiking to running, actually last night I had a pretty good fall because I didn't see a rock sticking. It was the smoothest trail you can imagine, but one rock, and I didn't see it just because in the dark it's hard to see. But that quality headlamp is it's pretty amazing. And there's a few good ones out there, but you know, it can really make your time a lot more enjoyable if you're not just guessing where each foot's coming down.
Okay. I know that I will find every rock in the daylight. I will kick every single rock out there on the trail. That's a common practice for me.
So you're clearing the trail for us. So thank you.
That's right. Part of my strategy is I try and do the least amount of effort as possible. So I have very low clearance when I pick my feet up, which has a tendency to kick every single rock or root. That's
efficiency. That's good. You can go far with trail running then too.
Nice. And let's segue from the gear to talking about the Barkley, because the last time you were on, I think, was maybe a week before you were leaving for the Barkley Marathons for the very first time. And so I want to provide our listeners and myself with the full experience with you going to the Barkleys. I mean, what was it like arriving, preparing, waiting for the blowing of the conch and the lighting of the cigarette? Take us through all that.
Wow. Okay. I drove out there because we were still pretty heavy COVID times, got out there a couple days before the event and ran some of the defined trails around the park, just get a little bit used to it. And then my aunt was out there as well because she was fully vaccinated and only fully vaccinated people could crew, and there weren't a whole lot of them. So she was kind of agreeing to help a number of the other runners out there. And the weather was pretty good leading up. And then the day before, the clouds opened up and it started raining and it didn't stop. And puddles were everywhere. And it just became like this question of, well, if it's going to be like that out there and it's a mud pit and we're not following trails, what gear changes do I need to make? And so everyone was kind of scrambling, and just with it being kind of closed off from the U.S. to overseas, it was, I think there were only two runners from overseas. So it was a lot of U.S. runners and a lot of virgins out there. So it was a very, very unique atmosphere in camp of everyone wondering what they got themselves into, especially as the rain kept coming down. It was wild. And so we all kind of tried to go to bed pretty early, and with no idea, we thought like, oh, it's, you know, there's a bunch of virgins here, it's raining really bad, like these are terrible conditions for people to do well anyways. He's gonna let us just wait till daylight and then blow the conch. And he blew it, I think, about 2 a.m. And so that meant we had a 3 a.m. start, which was not ideal. It was still pouring. There were puddles. The trail, we start off on the trail for a little bit to get up into the mountains, and the trail had become more of a stream than a trail. And once he left the trail, it was a slip and slide. It was just mud everywhere. And it was so much fun. It was like a slip and slide as a kid on the way down. But once you had to turn around and go back up that hill, it was not so fun. It was near impossible. And then the fog rolled in, couldn't see anything. Everyone struggled to get through the first lap alone. And Yeah, okay.
Let's stop right there for a sec, because I want to back up just a little bit. And you know, first of all, was your aunt, was she Aunt Legend, or did she have a trail?
Yeah, Aunt Kristen. She's a she's an iron woman, so she's done an Ironman. So
nice.
That's her trail name. Yeah.
And for our listeners out there who surprisingly might not know what the Barkley is, because I talk about it all the time. The Barkley Marathons is one of the toughest ultra races out there. How would you classify that?
I would just say race, unique race in general.
Yeah.
It's largely off trail. There's no GPS, no electronics other than your headlamp. You have to draw your own map from a guide map, and then you have to travel 5 loops of 25 miles with about 15,000 feet of elevation gain on each one. And you find books basically from riddles within instructions, and you tear one page out of each of the books. And that's like your checkpoint to show that you hit every point on the loop. And the race is designed so that there's like a 0.001% chance someone can finish. And so most years, no one finishes, such as this year. No one was even close.
Yeah, the race has been in existence for 30 plus years, mm-hmm. and there's been 15 finishers.
Yep.
And only a handful of those have been repeat finishers.
Yep. And it's all dependent on weather and the year and stuff. So
right. The
years people finish, sometimes two people finish, sometimes three people finish, but many of those 30 years, I would say most of the 30 years, no one finishes. No one even gets close. This year, no one made it out of loop 3.
Right. So it is a cruel race. I mean, there are a lot of factors that go into it. The distance and the time limit. You have 60 hours to do the 5 loops, 25 miles each loop. You do the loops. Some years you do them in opposite directions. You start off and you go every other one. Was that the situation this year?
No, this.
In terms of clockwise versus counterclockwise, you're going different directions.
Yeah, it was all over the place. It was like clockwise, then counterclockwise again, then back to clockwise. You don't know what the race is going to be till the instructions are handed out, which is a very unique feature. You also don't know when it's going to start. So we were talking about the conch shell. It can start anywhere from midnight to noon. And the only way you know is he blows a conch shell, which means the race starts in exactly 1 hour. And this year, one person didn't hear it and slept through the start of the race. So, and
that wasn't you.
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
And as with any great race, this is his words, it starts with him lighting a cigarette. And once he takes his first puff of that cigarette, that's when the runners start running. So you get a really good, like, nicotine buzz as he's just exhaling that right into these elite athletes' faces. It's incredible. There's nothing like it out there.
Yeah. So you've got the distance. You've got the elevation change. You've got the clockwise versus counterclockwise. You've got the fact that you've got to find these books based on the clues that you're given. And then
with a map that you've drawn yourself from his own map. So if you mess up your map, you're done.
Yeah. This is the craziest race out there. I mean, it is nuts. And then I think the compounding factor is that, you know, with a 60 hour time limit, basically 12 hours per loop, right?
Mm-hmm. Roughly.
Sleep deprivation then comes into play. Now, when you're out there doing 2 loops, 3 loops, 4 loops, you're making decisions and you're doing your wayfinding on a severe lack of sleep, which only compounds the problems out there.
Yeah. And how it's set up with 12 hours per loop, that means one's in the daylight and one's in the night. So nothing looks the same, even though you're going doing the same thing. And often he'll switch you directions. So if you've hiked a trail each direction, it looks totally different each way anyway. So there's every little way that you can fail. We were at one book looking for it for 2 hours. And this is kind of what killed not finishing that first loop in time. I got all the pages, but missed the cutoff. We're looking for 2 hours and we were within 100 yards of it, just couldn't piece together the clues in time or accurately. And that's what makes it fun and frustrating. And you go through every emotion so quickly. It's sort of like a through hike on steroids.
That's maddening. Absolutely maddening. And then you take all, I mean, the race is difficult. The race is difficult, period, in itself. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in rain and fog and cold, and it is just a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone has ever finished in a heavy fog year. Like Jared Campbell, the only three-time finisher, was out there this year, and he finished three loops, but over the cutoff to go out on the fourth. So he was two loops behind even being able to finish this for a fourth time, just because the fog and the weather is so rough. So it's so weather dependent. And of course, you don't know, you can get all types of weather within an hour out there. It's incredible.
Yeah. And you're not allowed to practice on the actual course prior to the race, right? Exactly. You could practice adjacent, you could practice trails in the park, but you cannot practice on the actual course.
Yeah, it's just very similar to any state or national park or anything out there where you have to stay on the trails. And this is the one event per year where he has the approval to send people wherever they want. So I actually talked to a ranger the day before the race, and they just said, asked him a few questions about certain things, and they just said, no, we hand over the keys to Laz this weekend, who is the race director. They're like, you got to ask him these things. We know it's a state park, but this is his weekend. He's in charge of everything.
Wow. He is a big shot. I mean, the Rangers turned the keys over to Laz Lake. Also, his given name is Gary Cantrell. He is the inspiration behind this. He's the one who created this, developed it, named it after his friend, but he was inspired by the prison escape of James Earl Ray, who escaped from, was it Bushy State Prison?
Brushy Mountain State.
Brushy Mountain. Yeah. He escaped. He was gone for 60 hours and they thought he must be long gone, but they actually found him like 2 or 3 miles away from the prison because the environment and the terrain were so rough out there. That's as far as he could get. And Laz, AKA Gary, said, you know what? I could have done 100 miles in 60 hours. And there you go. The Barkley Marathons, the idea, the inspiration was born.
And early on in the early parts of this race, Gary tried to run his own race. He never came anywhere close to running 100 miles. So he was proven wrong as well.
That's good to know. That's awesome. Because the people who show up for these races, the people who are admitted, who apply, I mean, these are elite athletes. These are people who are not unprepared. I mean, there is one person they admit every year who is like a sacrificial lamb, you know, who is not ready for it. But the majority of the competitors, and they are world-class athletes. We had Michael Wardian on the podcast here and talked about his experience. He is an ultra runner of the highest quality, top-notch, world-class athlete. And he has run it a couple times and only finished one loop, I believe.
Yeah. He is probably the most consistent and most accomplished ultra runner over the past 20 plus years. And it was just a different beast out there. He had hypothermia and had to quit just from the weather changing so quickly. It can be blue skies, and then an hour later, you're shivering, just hiding in a cave in the rocks or something.
That's right. That is, you know, when you're that level of athlete and the race puts you in a cave huddling with hypothermia, I mean, that kind of tells you what the race is all about. There are a couple of documentaries out there that are really good about the Barkley Marathons, and the titles will give you some insight. It's The Race That Eats Its Young and Where Dreams Go to Die. Those are the titles of the two most famous documentaries of the Barkley.
Yeah. Yep. And Jamil Curry has some good, he's been on too. He has some good content out there too. If you want to see and hear people that are so sure they can do well, go so quickly to, I don't want to do this anymore. So I think it's a good way to gauge that it is harder than anything some of these top people have ever done.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Jamil a little bit later. We had him on the podcast as well and found out that he was running the trail. I was really pulling for you and for Jamil on the course this past March. And you participated in his inaugural ultra marathon trail race, the Cocodona, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But before we get to that, so he blows the conch. You show up at 3 a.m., you're waiting for him to light the cigarette. What's going through your mind? What are you anticipating? What's ahead of you?
I'm just thinking, like, let's start this thing. But so when he blows the conch, you get your watch. So you don't even get to bring your own watch. He hands you a watch. We walk up to the tent where he's handing out the watches. It's a pocket watch. Like, it's an analog pocket watch with no ability to set an alarm. Basically, it's pointless. Everyone just put it in their packs and was like, we're not using this because there's no use for this in the realm of this race. It's what someone would be carrying in the 1800s is just check the time. So that was useless, but I guess a good gift and a good memento that no one actually used out there. And then, yeah, at the start line, show up, ready. He lights a cigarette. We go. And then about 2 miles in, the runner behind me says, did you bring your bib? Do you know what bib number you are? And it was like, yeah, I brought it right here. And he's like, I think I forgot to bring my bib and I don't know what number I am. And so he made the decision that he was going to turn around and run all the way back down to try to figure out what number he was. And it was just like, oh no. He was telling me he was having a panic attack because he couldn't find his bib in his pack. And so it was a high pressure situation here. So yeah, there's a lot can happen. And then people, even the first book, there's Jared Campbell, who's done it 4 or 5 times total. And then Jamil Curry, who has done it 6+ times, maybe more. And they're kind of leading the way looking for the first book, but there's so much fog. They're hunting around in the bushes and looking for where it is. And we're just like, we have no chance if they can't find this book. So it really just was very humbling very quickly, and found a number of books on my own, was able to kind of get in Laz's mind from the instructions and in the riddle way he kind of writes them, and did pretty well. But it was just like, wow, this is totally unique from anything else out there.
Do you remember a particular riddle that you can share with the listeners out there, or is that forbidden?
Well, let's just, like, an abstract one would be like, once you see a hidden rock wall, continue past it by the weird looking tree, veer to the left, climb up on the small hill, and there you'll find X item. And it's like, okay, that's starting with a hidden or obscured rock wall. It's like, that's, you could find 1,000 things within a mile in the woods that you can consider an obscured rock wall. And that's why it's, being a veteran comes in so handy. It's just like, it is so hard. It's, as he says, everything you need is right there, but you can apply that to everything if you have no idea what you're looking for.
Yeah. And what was your strategy going in? Did you say, you know, I'm gonna follow a veteran, I'm kind of latch onto a veteran group and just stay on their heels and see what they do? Or did you band up with a couple of newbies? What was your approach? Yeah.
For a couple books was with Jamil, and then the fog got so heavy that I thought he was one headlight or headlamp, but turns out it wasn't him. So now I'm just with another virgin out there. And we found the next book, then ran along on my own, found a couple more, and then found another virgin out there. We found one, and then there turned into like 5 of us hunting around for this one book for 2 hours. More and more people kept coming. But yeah, the fog just messed up everything. It's just like, you can go in with the best strategy of, oh, I think my fitness, I can go with someone, but yeah, if you blink or look away, you might think the wrong headlamp was the person you were hoping to follow. So I don't know. It was a really fun time, but it was also just like, wow, you need a lot to go your way to even be in that realm of possibility to you know, get deep into the race at the very least.
Yeah, when you lose Jamil in the fog, I mean, that fog's got to be thick.
Very, yeah. You could barely see anything. You might just like mistake the flash of a headlamp off like a bush for what you thought was another headlamp, because it's just so dense of fog, and it just sticks to the mountains up there.
Wow. All right. And what was the offering that you had to bring Laz?
As a virgin, you bring a license plate from your home state, but the returning, as we'll call them, returning failures, the returners who hadn't finished the race had to bring a case of Moxie soda, which is only sold in Maine, I believe. And then I think Jared was the only one who finished before, and he had to bring a case of Camel unfiltered cigarettes.
Okay.
Which, so in the documentaries, when it talks about that's what prior finishers bring, Laz does smoke those. So just if you're wondering, it's not just a funny thing. That's just feeding his smoking habit here. It's just like, I can get a couple packs. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a license plate for the virgins. It is Moxie soda, at least this past year, for the returners who did not finish. And for returning finishers, it's the camel cigarettes.
Yeah. And every year Laz decides what the returning failures bring to him. And in the past, he's been like, well, I'm getting low on socks, so I'd like people to bring me socks, or I need shirts, bring me shirts. Or it's like, oh, I tried Moxie soda, I like it, I'll have him bring me Moxie soda. So he has a method of shopping for himself.
Very good. So you hit all the books, you made the complete circuit, but you didn't do it in the time limit.
Yep.
You come back, they play Taps for you.
Oh yeah. Yep. Taps in the pouring rain. It was great. Yeah.
And were you thinking, damn it, I didn't get to go for a second loop, or all right, I don't have to go for a second loop?
I think it was always the mindset of, if it took 3 days, I would stay out there to make sure I got all the pages of all the books, even if it was too slow, like a couple people that I met or I saw starting to walk back were just like, there's no way we'll finish in time. And it's like, yeah, well, they're not going to pull us off the course. We can search as long as we want. It's like, I'm going to get all my pages. I'm going to actually do the full loop, whether it's too slow or not. And so that was the mindset. And the whole thing going into it was like, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to time out or something like that. It's just like the whole mindset and being ready and having like a list of accomplishments to get into the Barclay is all about, you know, going after things that are nearly unattainable or having accomplishments like that. It's like, I didn't get to be able to have the opportunity to participate by quitting. It's more like by pushing on. So that was kind of the only strategy I had going in, is like, no matter how long it takes, I'm just going to keep on trucking until I have all the pages, because I'm out here to do one loop, and if it's fast enough, I'll do a second loop. So made sure I finished that loop, and it's just too slow, much like everybody else out there.
Outstanding. That is, I love the way you put that. This race, as you just described, is virtually impossible. It is, the success rate is so small. This is on what is barely attainable for a human being of the highest athletic caliber. So I
would describe it as, some years it might actually be impossible. It is so dependent on external factors than training and navigation and not making a mistake on your own. It might not even be possible some years, especially because every time someone finishes, he adds in another hill. So it's so close to impossible if the weather is perfect, that if, you know, it's a little bit off, I mean, good luck.
And what did you think of the new hill he added this year?
So it was, let's see, he added it in 19, and it was Barclay was canceled in 20 because of state of the world. And so it's called the Meat Grinder, and it's quite a hill. It's it'll beat you up, whether you're going up or going down it. It's It's like when you're running down the sand at the beach and you just feel like your body's out of control and going to fall down. That's about the angle of the meat grinder on the Barkley course.
And how did Ratjaw treat you?
Oh, Ratjaw's cool. It's wide open. It's where one of the only hills on the course you can see pretty much the whole hill. So it's kind of a good perspective on like, oh, all the hills are like this, but since it's a power line cut, you can kind of see up it, and it makes a lot more sense of, I guess, why you're so tired at that point. And it's iconic, just knowing the race for a while, it's pretty cool to get your chance to go up Ratjaw.
Okay, having been through it once and making the complete circuit, finding all the pages, you gonna do it again next year?
Oh, absolutely. Some of those books that took too long, I'll never have to take more than 10 minutes again. I have dreams about where they are and how I'm going to find them. So, I mean, I'll at least throw my name out there and see if I get accepted again. But it's an awesome experience and some of the most fun. You get to just go out into the woods with all these elite runners and like have fun for some time on a scavenger hunt. It's like you're at a kindergarten birthday party, but you're grown adults and pushing your body to the brink. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Now, with you being exhausted and vulnerable from your full moon run, care to share any insights into the application process for the Barkley? I know you were a little vague last time you were on.
Yeah, I think the key is if you want to get in bad enough, you'll figure out how to do it. There you go.
Appropriately vague again. Okay. Very good. Hey, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Legend about the Cocodona and his full moon runs and what's next in his adventure career. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. The John Freakin' Muir Pod is sponsored by Outdoor Vitals, the ultralight backpacking gear company whose mission is to improve the mental, physical, and emotional health of mankind by facilitating impactful outdoor experiences. Outdoor Vitals creates innovative technical products with confidence-inspiring education that empower outdoor ultralight adventurers. Their focus on performance enables you to live ultralight with gear you can actually be confident with. Whether you're looking for an ultralight sleep system, shelter, or pack, or if you're looking for top-quality apparel for the trail, you can find it at Outdoor Vitals. Do yourself a favor. Live ultralight. Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere, and even earn money, all in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer, so no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free with no catch. Since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like my creativity has raised to another level. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started.
And welcome back, talking to Jeff Legend Garmeyer. just finished hearing about his experience at the Barclay, and I was completely hooked and fascinated. Thank you very much for sharing all that. And I told you at the break that I will drop whatever I have to drop everything. And if you need a crew member next year, I will crew for you. Count on me. Yeah. So I'll throw that out there.
Perfect. Yeah. And we'll put you at the, on the long list of people who like to find their way to Frozen Head State Park.
All right. But
goal number one is get in again. Then maybe we can.
Okay. All right. Sending good thoughts. Go through that very secretive application process. We'll have our fingers crossed and we'll wait to hear from you.
Cool. Perfect.
Okay. Hey, we talked about a little bit earlier. You participated in the Cocodona, which was Jamil Corey's race in Arizona. And I believe this was the inaugural race, mm-hmm. the first time that it was run. Tell us a little bit about the course. How long was the course, and is there a time limit on it?
So it's 255 miles long. It and it's a running race. Yeah, so it takes days. Like, your time is measured in multiple days. Let's see, the time limit, I believe, was 5 days in total, and inaugural year. So that means they don't really know. They're guessing for an estimate when the first person will finish, and they're not quite sure how the course will treat runners and all these types of things, which for me is exactly what I want. I mean, any marathon that's been going for a long time, it's a set course on the roads with robust aid stations and everything's perfect, but I mean, the adventure of an inaugural run, that's pretty awesome too. They're like, we're not exactly sure the length of the race either. It's probably around 255, but I think it came out to like 258 miles, you know, just three bonus miles. And I'll tell you, after you've run 255 miles, you're sort of ready to be done. So those extra 3 miles, they feel a lot longer than just if you were just doing 3 miles.
Absolutely. I mean, I imagine that is exacerbated by a 255, 258 mile race. But I know that running is such a mental game. It's a mental accomplishment. If you got in your mind, you're going to run 10 miles and then someone tells you, hey, you got to do 12. Yeah. I mean, by the time you get to 10, you're finished. I mean, your mind plays this game. And yeah. So I can imagine getting to 255 and someone saying, hey, just three more. You're almost there. And you're like, oh my gosh, no way.
Yeah. If anyone's run a marathon, it's like you get to that 26 mile marker and then it's like, you still got 0.2 and it looks so far away. You can probably see the finish line, but it's like, I got to still keep going. I made my 26, but that 0.2 feels a lot longer than most of the 0.2 leading up to that point.
Yeah. 258 miles. That's insanity. That's insane. Mm-hmm. That is a long way to drive, let alone run. What is the distance between aid stations? So at a marathon, you've got aid stations basically every couple of miles.
So the longest distance was about 21 miles. So almost a marathon. So no big deal. And then probably the average was about 14 or 15 miles between aid stations. So you are out there for hours on your own. You kind of got to be prepared and carry enough stuff. And it is Arizona, but Arizona isn't just the Phoenix that most people know. We're going into Northern Arizona, and I was down there a week before the race and it snowed on us. So you got to be prepared for everything out there. And you know, it's a race, but with 258 miles, there's places where you're on your own out there.
Yeah. And there's elevation gain, right? Throughout the race. Yeah,
probably 48,000 feet over 258 miles.
And of course, you're not running 258 miles. That's impossible, right?
No, you're sprinting it. Yeah. No, there's a lot. I think the adage is you want to run downhill. You maybe hobble, jog, or walk a little bit on the flats, and then you're hiking the uphills. It's kind of the strategy you go with. And of course, with anything in life, once you get to day two or three, the strategy's out the window and you're just doing whatever your legs and body can do. But usually that's kind of the strategy ultra runners go with.
And what are you carrying during this race? Is it like through hiking and you're just running the downhills, or is your kit different, completely different?
completely different. Running pack, lightweight, only carrying enough food to get to the next aid station, and then, you know, the minimal gear to kind of combat anything if anything went wrong. Like, I think we had to have an emergency blanket and it was like rain jacket, that kind of thing. But yeah, very much, it's like a through hike in the sense, if you were doing the Pacific Crest Trail, you would think of everything in 3 to 5 day stretches between resupplies. And you're just applying that to 15 to 20 mile segments between aid stations, which are basically resupplies. So you're just, it's just a micro level of through hiking, but you know, you're going to have a smaller pack, which turns out to be a vest, a running vest in this case. And you're just keeping an eye on, you know, filling how much water you're going to need for the next section and that type of thing. But this race was specifically hard because a quarter of the elevation gain was in the first 30 miles. So you gained 10,000 feet in the first 30 miles, and it was waterless for 21 miles between aid stations. So people were just struggling in that first, let's say, half day of the race. As you're going through that first 30 miles, people are just laying on the side of the trail in the shade, just like trying to bring themselves back to life after how hard it was. And you get to mile 31 and it's like, oh, made it through that hard section. Now I only have 224 miles to go. And people were dehydrated. People were throwing up. This is a 50K. This is like the length of a marathon. People are throwing up and they have over 200 miles to go. So Jamil really came up with the course that humbles you immediately and is like, how much do I want to be doing this for 3 more days?
Yeah. And what kind of food, how much food do you have stuffed into that running vest?
Not a ton. I think it's very dependent on how many, just like through hiking, how many calories a day, how many, and then running, it's kind of how many calories per mile. So I usually go with the like Honey Stinger or Stroop waffles. I go with a couple of those and then a couple, maybe more normal food things like a wrap or something from an aid station. And then I always like to have a couple options that's like, maybe I'm going to want this or maybe I'm not, but you don't want to be out there and not want to eat the food you have. So I'm kind of err on the through hiker side of, well, it would suck to be 3 hours and hating the food I brought. So I'll bring a couple just different options buried deep in the pack.
Anybody out there carrying a large deep dish pizza?
I don't think so, but that would be a great idea. You'd have to have a really good crew. So just in kind of signing up and joining this, basically the last minute, I didn't have a crew and I had one pacer. And so I was basically outside of the aid stations, just self-supporting myself. Right before the race started, I threw an extra pair of socks in my pack and was like, I'll just rotate packs or socks like I'm on a through hike. So I definitely had a different approach than a lot of people out there.
Okay. And so I was going to ask you, you know, are you able to be supported or is it self-supported out there? Does your crew meet you at the aid stations or how does that work?
Yeah. If you had a crew, they would meet you at the aid stations where a crew is allowed. And one thing I noticed is a dialed in crew is great, but a crew that is just like mom and dad coming out, they are just going to slow you down so much, like so much wasted time. So other than some of the people who had people crewing that were experienced, it was like, it kind of helped that I just had this mindset of fill up water, get food, and then kind of move on to the next one. It's very much the through hiker mindset of eliminate the distractions. Because if you're through hiking and friends want to come hang out at each town along the way, it's like, that'll kill your momentum.
Yeah, the legend of legend just continues to grow. And he runs the Cocodona 258 miles, no crew, just an extra pair of socks. You know, it'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, you always want an extra pair of socks. That could also be the gear advice. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. All right. Do you know Jamil?
Yeah. We've run quite a bit, or at least a decent amount together. And yeah, he's he's somewhat soft-spoken about the races and what he's doing and stuff. And then you're out there in the first 50K with him and running right next to him. And it's just like, he's like, wow, this is harder than I thought it would be for the first 50K. And there's no water. And it's like, wow, yeah. Well, good news is we only have 220 miles to go. So looks like we're doing great.
Nice. And so what was your finish time? How many days and hours did it take you?
Somewhere in the 4 day range, I guess. It's hard to know when. So I slept 1.5 hours over 4 days. So not each day, 90 minutes over 4 days, which comes out to, I don't know, 22 minutes a day.
And are those just side of the road dirt naps?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah. I can't sleep on a plane or a train or an automobile, but I can sleep anywhere in nature. I can just fall over and I'm really good at like a 5 minute nap recharge. And it's like good to go. Yep.
And that brings me back to the Barkley just for a second with that pocket watch that they gave you with no alarm setting on it. I mean, if you had to take a nap out there being sleep deprived, I mean, you'd have to rely on yourself to wake yourself up. I mean, you could slip into a deep sleep and lose 2 or 3 hours right there.
Absolutely. And the strategy would be sleep where it's most uncomfortable. So your body's going to go to sleep, but the second like a gust of wind hopefully can wake you up. But that's the only thing you have. You don't have anything else.
Gabe Peterson, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, he and Kevin, who fast packed the JMT and they're also ultra runners. He will take a caffeine pill 10 minutes before he takes a dirt nap and count on that caffeine pill to wake him up.
Interesting. Yeah, I know. I've heard drinking a cup of coffee and then taking a nap is the best way to get the most value out of your power nap. You're just hitting that sleep and hitting that caffeine at the same time and just come back stronger than ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on the Cocodona. I mean, just finishing a 258 mile race. That's a career resume builder right there.
Thanks. Yeah, it was so much fun. So it was very interesting being maybe the only through hiker or person really more from that realm, because it was like 250 miles is something I can conceptualize in my mind of distance. And it was like, not worried about the distance. It's like, what are the little things that ultra runners who've run 50 races like have learned that I need to make sure that I know? And it just was, those were the little things. It's like, I was sweating the details because I knew I could make it to the end no matter what, just even if I walked the whole thing in the time limit. So it was a very different style of what people were worrying about. Like some were like, I don't know if I'll be comfortable at night. And it was like, man, I'm going to be so comfortable at night. It's going to be awesome out there. So yeah, it was cool to just have such a different background than everyone. And in a 250-mile race, you're not exactly sprinting against each other from the beginning. So you get to have a lot of great conversations with people out there. And it's just awesome, the people you meet out there that all have different stories, different reasons, what they enjoy. And, you know, you got to be sort of weird if you're spending your vacation to go run 250 miles and you're paying to do it. So it's just a very cool culture that's completely different than some of the cross country or road running or anything like that in my background. So definitely opened my eyes to kind of that world for the future as well.
Nice. And as a triple crown or calendar triple crown and doing the Great Western Loop, would you average or could you average 50 miles a day?
Oh yeah. Yep.
So you knew going into the Cocodona that if you had to, I mean, you could just put in 50 mile days and you get it done in 5 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I did 9 days unsupported on the Colorado Trail to get that record. And I averaged 52 miles a day with starting with a 29 pound pack. And it was like with the running vest, I'm sure I could just hike this and finish. And it's like, what are the things that would likely end this by making mistakes? So I just tried to eliminate those. And then it was like, okay, I get this. But so at the start of the race, they have these GPS trackers that because they did live coverage and stuff. But there were a number of things I didn't know because I've only really raced 50K before and some road running stuff. But I show up the night before, camp out there, and then I'm taking my drop bags over to the truck that's going to take them. And they're like, okay, where are these going? And I had two bags and it was like, oh, I thought these were following us the whole way. And they're like, no, you're supposed to do one for each aid station with the drop bag. And it was like, oh no, well, I have 10 minutes till the start. And so I just picked out two random spots on the place and like, I guess here and here and see what happens. It's when I threw a spare pair of socks and was like, these drop bags are not going to be helpful. I really didn't know how they drop bags worked in these things. Then I walk up to the start line and I'm waiting. And then it's like a minute to go and they're, you know, kind of starting to count down. And it's like, oh, everyone has these spot trackers on. It's like, oh no, I have to get one of those. So I run over to the info booth and they're like helping people and takes a little bit of courage to speak up. And it's like, I'm supposed to start in like 30 seconds. Can I just like get one of those on me so I can start running? And it's just like all these little things, they strap it on and get up there for the 10 second countdown and then start running. But all the stress was gone once it finally started. But leading up to it, it was just like, oh, okay. I didn't know all these little things about like how the race was going. And, you know, maybe that's, comes with experience, but it was pretty funny just realizing, well, the distance isn't going to be the thing that trips me up. It's like how all this actually goes is more the tradition or whatever for running. But it was I was just glad to start.
Now, legend, did I hear you correctly? You said that prior to this 258 mile race, your longest prior race was a 50K.
Yeah, I think this this online media person did a race preview. He was Chase Parnell. He does Treeline Journal, and he tweeted and was like, showed a picture of my. It's called Ultra Sign Up, where it shows your race history, and it showed 150K for me, and he just tweeted, wow, bold move, because it showed that Cocodona was the next one. And it was like, yeah, just jumping up from 30 miles to 250. And it's like, yeah, it's a natural progression, I guess. But
natural progression. Another reason your name is legend. That is legendary right there.
Thanks. Yeah, awesome. I know. It's fun to go into things and be like, or even on the trail, even if you're just backpacking casually, it's like, something went wrong. It's like, well, here's the things I have to fix it. How are we going to fix it? Because we don't have anything else. It's kind of fun to get those problems. And it's like, well, probably screwed up my drop bags. What do I need to be successful? Probably another pair of socks. Okay, I'll throw it in my pack. Let's go.
I have said many times about myself that if ignorance is bliss, I'm one of the happiest guys on the planet sometimes.
Yeah, no, I wish I could say that. I think I overthink and realize that, maybe it started as ignorance and now it's just like a lack of prior knowledge and knowing a little too late.
All right. Hey, we're running out of time. Let me run through some of our other segments. I also want to hear about your full moon nighttime races or nighttime activities that you put together. When did this start and what kinds of activities have you done with this?
Yeah. So my friend, Will Taylor, Ultra Bad Will on Instagram. When we kind of started hanging out, he was like, have you ever thought about doing the ridge, which is about 20 miles in Bozeman at night? And I was like, not really, but there's a full moon in 5 days. You want to do it? And I think he was shocked that I was so casual about like, sure. I mean, let's just do it then. If you're into it, I could probably figure out how to make it work. It's like, let's do it in 5 days. And he's like, okay. And so we did it.
Did you tell him to bring an extra pair of socks?
No, I just assumed he was he'd already thought it out way more than me. And it's like, well, I can get out 20 miles doing anything. So we just shuttled our cars and started. It was thunder and lightning leading up to it. And so we hiked up to near Treeline, but neither of us would. We were like, we're not in any danger yet. Let's just wait to call it and we'll go back down if it gets bad. So kind of hang out around tree line a little, and then thunder and lightning blows over, and then we proceed through the full moon and the night to cover the entire ridge. And from then it was like, I think we should do this as many full moons as we can. And so we were in different locations because I travel quite a bit for things. And a couple months ago, and he did one of the higher peaks in Montana. I did one of the 14ers in the Sierra Nevada, Mount Langley. And we kind of had our virtual, we call it we live on Moonbeam Lane. So we just call it the Moonbeam event. And we did that. And then yesterday was a blue moon, which news for the listeners. A blue moon is usually when there's two in a month, but it can also be when there's an extra one in the season. So this one was extra special because it was an extra one in the season. So we decided to go pretty big and do the Timberline Trail. And we started at 8 p.m. last night, finished about 10 a.m., then did the all-you-can-eat buffet that PCT hikers love at Timberline Lodge. Drove back here and got my hour of sleep and just rolling through the day still. And yeah, we've really expanded on the idea of just running. Now we don't really know how crystals work, but we know they're involved in the full moon. So we bought a number of crystals and we charge them during the full moon. And we don't know what they lead to, but it seems to be leading to something. So we're really expanding. If anyone wants to reach out and tell me how to use all these charged crystals, because they're very charged, I just don't know what to do with them. So
they can only help. They can only help.
Exactly. Yes. And so, yeah, we have, we have big plans, but we basically, it's not a race. It's not anything. It's just an adventure. And just with traveling quite a bit, it's pretty funny. We just like run through the night, tell jokes, talking, just like imitations, laugh, and just like have an awesome time. It's no pressure. We don't care how fast we do it, but it's just so much fun every time. It does kill a couple days and it's probably really bad long term for sleep deprivation, but at this point in time it's a fun way to do things. So we're thinking about some merch with Moonbeam stuff, so let me know if you're interested and we'll
sign me up. Absolutely. Now, any hallucinations out there during these full moon runs, or the Barkley or the Cocodona? Any good hallucinations out there from sleep deprivation?
The Cocodona for sure. So some of the lower level ones that I've had before, our sticks are starting to slither and it looks like you have like someone staring at you through binoculars from a ways away. Those I've had before, but in Cocodona, it got a little weird when just hobbling down this dirt road and the sun is just rising. So it's kind of flat light and shining through the pine trees. And it almost looked like people in reflective vests were working on the road. So I thought there was a whole construction crew ahead, and I got there and there was nobody there. So I obviously knew that that was a hallucination. And then I kept going. And then it looked like up ahead, there was a trailhead and there were like, I don't know, 50 cars parked at it and hiking. Get up there, there's no trailhead and there's no cars. And then as I'm looking into the woods, it looks like every rock is an abandoned car and things like that. But this is day three, and at that point I'd had about 32 minutes of sleep, and it was just like, wow, I've lost it, but this is kind of awesome. So
mind playing tricks on you out there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting state to get in, because it's happened enough that I know that it's not real, or that each thing that's a little out of place could not be real. So it doesn't freak me out anymore, but it is always like, oh, that's interesting. My brain wanted to turn that into that. So it's kind of entertaining in the moment, I would say.
All right. What's the next big adventure for Legend?
Oh, I'm doing, my second 50K ever coming up here at the beginning of September. So we'll see how that goes. I've wanted to just try a little bit more running and stuff. And then looking at some FKT stuff coming up later this year, maybe like a Florida trail or something like that. And then I'm kind of relaunching my whole YouTube channel and stuff like that, putting out some content that is somewhat, it's going to be informative and entertaining. And just, I have so much stuff. I've been really wanting to turn it into watchable bites. So I'm pretty excited to put that out there and just give people some insight into a number of trails. And I also co-founded this website, Backpacking Routes, where we put out trails that are not the Triple Crown trails, but they're anywhere from, their lowest is 15 miles up to over 1,000 miles. These trails currently around the US that are, it gives you all the things you need to plan your hike, the GPS file, water situation, resupply stuff. And it's just like, let's spread the impact away from these Triple Crown trails. You're doing a section hike of the PCT. It's like, well, there's some pretty epic spots in Wyoming or the Sawtooth Loop in Idaho. It's like, you could do something super unique that there aren't already 10 million pictures of, or you can get your own experience. So we're kind of just trying to put that information out there, and it's been well received there too. You
know, nice. What's the website?
It's backpackingroutes.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And I got a documentary coming out on the, we're working on it coming out probably two to six months from now on the Colorado Trail record that set. And then beyond that, a million other things. I would say just follow along and hang on for the ride. There's a lot of stuff coming all the time.
Okay. When does the movie come out about the Calendar Triple Crown?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean,
and what actor plays you in the movie?
Bradley Cooper, for sure.
Nice. I see that. Yeah. Yep.
I would say that will come out in 2023 on October 15th.
Okay. Very highly specific. Yep. This year, highly specific. Barclay entrance procedures, very, very vague. So,
yep.
You know, yeah, kind of give and take. Yeah.
You got to pick and choose. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Can't be vague to you all the time. Got to keep you on your toes.
Keep me on the hook. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we have an impromptu top five list here. And of course it's related to the Barclay. I want to know about your top five moments. And top five moments from your Barclay marathon experience in any particular order.
Yeah. Number one is probably checking in, getting to walk up, meet Laz, and we'll include copying the map down, all those little things that are in those movies you watch or the write-ups you see. I think that's when it becomes the real experience. And then from there, it becomes your own. But you have to get through that initial experience that everyone has that's like this is what you do when you're in Barclay. So that was number one for sure. Number two, the humbling of looking for one book for over 2 hours is exactly what's supposed to happen to virgins out there. And it has to be one of the top five moments. It sucks, but it's like, this is the point of the race. So number three, I would say going through the Flume of Doom, which is basically a slip and slide down the rocks for like 50 feet. That is definitely not safe, but so much fun. And you just land in like a mud pit and continue sliding down the mountain. So it's super fun. Number four, getting the last page of the loop and just knowing that I found all the books and just knowing, just run it into the gate and just knowing that I did a full loop, even though I was too slow. Pretty cool feeling. Number five, just touching the gate and kind of wrapping up the loop. You start from it and you end at it. Maybe your time's too slow, but it's like I successfully did one loop, just too slow. So that was kind of cool. Throw in taps with that, and it's a very cool thing where there's tradition around it, but it's also so much is unknown after you leave that yellow gate and get back to that yellow gate.
Hey, you are part of a very elite and select group that has participated in the Barclay Marathons. So congratulations again on that, on the Coca Dona, on all the other great things you've got going for yourself. You know where we are right now?
gear segment.
We're at the pro tip insight of the week. What little piece of wisdom can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better?
I would say anytime you're having the biggest day, like people like to do the 24-hour challenge or an ultra running race, or just pushing your body to a point where you're going to be exhausted at the end, hold off as long as you can to take caffeine, because the diminishing returns are staggering. If you start early, you're not going to have anything to use late. So I've learned this a lot on these moonbeam outings. It's like, yeah, you don't need to start by drinking a cup of coffee, but maybe you need some caffeine at hour six. So I think blue hikers get addicted to caffeine and really crappy coffee a lot. You're going for that big 24-hour day, just hold off until about hour 16, and then you're going to be able to push through and maybe get up into this 60-mile range instead of the 50-mile range.
And throw in that extra pair of socks.
Yeah, always extra pair of socks. If anyone ever wants to get me a gift, I love socks. When I'm rich, I'll wear a brand new pair of socks every single day.
Very good. All right. There you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Legend. I want to thank him for joining us this week. Legend, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah. At the Free Outside on Twitter and Instagram, freeoutside.com. It's kind of where a lot of stuff funnels through. YouTube. Channel Free Outside, backpackingroutes.com. Other than that, probably just Google or Bing. I don't know. Ask Jeeves if you're into that. Yeah, there's a Facebook group or Facebook page called Free Outside. Content kind of hits everywhere. It's kind of what you're into. Just Google me on a podcast app, find a few things. But yeah, if you want to actually get a response and it's pretty slow, I would say just smash that email button on Instagram, and otherwise probably going to miss it, because you heard all the things coming, and it's all for the interested people out there like you guys listening. So I'm excited about it, but it leaves not too much time to respond to message requests.
We appreciate the valuable time that you're able to spend with us tonight. We know it's in short supply. Question for you, big question. What about TikTok? You on TikTok?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm Homeless Jeff on TikTok.
No. I don't know if I should believe you or not on that one.
At Homeless Jeff. I mean, look it up. I think I'm amazing at TikTok, but apparently Gen Z doesn't, because I don't have a lot of followers yet.
Okay, at Homeless Jeff.
Yep, yeah.
I'm looking it up, buddy. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, you're going to start laughing.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com. Legend, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for some kind of adventure media to help keep our listeners connected to the outdoors. Any suggestions for a book, a movie, documentary, anything like that?
Yeah. Okay, it can be broad outdoors. The Shane McConkie film by Red Bull is my favorite, I guess you'd say, in that documentary realm of all time, because he has so much fun. He's so talented. He's so entertaining. And won't spoil anymore, but if you want to be entertained, even if you don't like skiing or don't like the outdoors, I don't know why you're listening, but still, that is an awesome film.
I totally agree. I saw, I think it's called, is it called McConkie?
McConkie, yep.
Yeah, it was outstanding. And we won't spoil anything for the listeners here, but check it out. Excellent choice. And before we wrap things up, I've got one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?
Man, that's a great question. How people can give me better ideas for videos on TikTok.
Okay. How can people give you better ideas for videos on TikTok?
Just email me like 100 ideas and I'll try them all out.
Okay. At Homeless Jeff on TikTok.
Yep. That's the one. All right. You don't believe me, but it's true.
Okay. I'm looking it up. That's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Legend? I heard you give a shout out to your Moonbeam adventure buddy out there. What was his social media handle again?
Will Taylor at Ultra Bad Will. Ultra Bad. Yeah. It's Ultra Bad Will. And then, let's give a shout out to my mom and dad at Badass Baby Boomers. They're doing a 400-mile section hike of the Oregon section of the PCT right now. So,
wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it really is. It's pretty awesome. They're doing it their way, doing it how they want, really enjoying it. They wanted to do it for a while, and they're having a good time out there, I think. So you should check them out on social media. Give them some tips too, because I don't think they're real familiar with the Instagram. So there you go.
Okay. And were you inspired by them? That's how you got into this, or were they inspired by you?
Well, I think we've come full circle. They inspired me, and maybe now there's a bit of inspiration I'm sending their way. Who knows? Maybe it's the crystals. I don't know how they work.
The crystals.
Yep.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you've lost Jamil Corey in the fog. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.